You are listening to Friends of Europe's podcast. Don't miss our debates on global and European issues that span political, economic, social, and environmental challenges. And follow our website at friendsofeurope.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Cafe Crossfire debate, entitled Get Europe Moving, Tackling the Physical Inactivity Crisis. So before we start, and I should just introduce myself, my name is Tamsin Rose, and I'm the non-resident fellow at Friends of Europe. Did the title of today's session make you think about coming here any differently than you would ordinarily have done so? Just an idea, something to think about. And I'm hoping it will make you think about going home in a different way. Walking, running, cycling, building in a little bit more activity in our everyday life. Because what you're going to hear tonight will hopefully inspire you. It might surprise you. It might shock you. But it is certainly not going to leave you unmoved. Because the focus of today is moving. Whether it's moving ideas, moving policies, or moving bodies. So let me introduce to you our distinguished panel who are going to open up this question for us. So sitting here just next to me, we have James Quincey, who's the president of the Coca-Cola Company's Europe Group. We have Mr. Antonio Silva Mendes from the European Commission, Director for Youth and Sport. We have Mergens Kirkeby, the president of the International Sport and Culture Association. We have Vicky Price, who is the joint head of the UK government's economic service and the lead author of a CEBR study, The Economic Costs of Physical Inactivity in Europe. And copies of the study were outside, and I hope you'll take them and read them and use the materials. And sitting next to Vicky, we have Sean Kelly, who's a member of the European Parliament and the founding executive chairman of the Irish Institute of Sport. So we have a really interesting panel for you of people who have understanding of different aspects of this issue and who'll be able to take this forward. Let me just remind you how the Cafe Crossfire process works. We'll have an opening statement from each of our speakers, and we've invited them to limit themselves to 5 minutes, so that we 5 minutes each, I should say. Not 5 minutes between them, that would be a little unfair. 5 minutes each. And then we're going to have a debate and exchange with you, the audience. So you are expected to be active in this discussion on physical activity. So let me start by inviting Vicky to set the scene for us. What are we talking about in terms of the size of a problem? What does it mean for Europe? And what does it mean for our health and well-being? Vicky, the floor is yours.
Do this sitting down and hoping the table in front doesn't collapse in front of us, as it nearly did a few minutes ago. Anyway, I'm delighted to be here. Thank you very much for asking us to talk about the study that CBR has done on the cost of inactivity. And we see this very, very much as part of important and ongoing efforts to get Europeans to become more active. And our job was to try and assess the economic costs associated with the inactivity crisis, as we term it. And I think it is an inactivity crisis, and I'll talk about that in a minute with some startling figures, because our findings were really sort of quite startling. If you measure it against World Health Organization guidelines, 1 in 4 European adults and 4 in 5 European adolescents, in other words, sort of younger people, are not sufficiently active. In fact, way below the activity levels that are expected of them. And it's really interesting, of course, that the young are even worse than the older ones, people, because, of course, some of the guidelines are slightly tougher for the young ones. But if you don't start early, then the chances are that later on in life you'll be even more inactive and the problems then mount up. And, of course, the level of inactivity that we're seeing is contributing not just to obesity, but to cancers, heart disease, stroke, and, of course, diabetes. And inactivity-related diseases are killing over 500,000 people across the EU each year. But, of course, there are also mental health implications of this level of inactivity. And it's estimated that mental health issues affect 1 in 4 of us in some stage in our lives. And physical activity, as the ancient Greeks, in fact, used to say, and I have to declare I'm Greek and ancient these days, physical inactivity can be a very effective tool in addressing these problems. So mental health improvements are very much linked to being more physically active. Now, why do we worry about that? Of course we worry about about it from a human cost perspective. But economically, too, the figures are staggering, because the economic costs of these inactivity-related physical and mental disorders, in terms of, for example, medical expenses, as well as lost output. So people can't work as long, they can't work so well, they're less productive, they have shorter lives. They amount, in our calculations, to over 80 billion euros per year. And those costs, though large already, are set to rise. Because, of course, this is the nature of new employment, sitting in front of our TV screens a lot of the time. And the nature of inactivity as a behavior which sort of stores up health problems for the future means that today's inactive population, and especially, as I was mentioning before, the inactive young people we have, will give rise to mounting economic costs in the future. So we're taking a snapshot now. This isn't a static one. There's a dynamic movement underneath which makes things worse over a period. So if we don't get people moving now, then physical inactivity is going to pose an even greater risk than it currently does. I mean, the good news, of course, is that the medicine is inherently free. So we're not talking about giving everyone loads of pills that make them more active. We're talking about doing activity, which generally doesn't cost anything. Obviously, you know, at times you may have to pay for the gym membership. But overall, one can do all sorts of things for nothing. So moving costs nothing. They do now say, of course, that sitting is the new smoking in terms of what it does to you. Of course, you have heard the new management guidelines are, if you're really, really cool as a company, to do all your meetings standing up. The reason they were saying it, of course, is so that you have shorter meetings. But they forgot that actually it can make you much healthier as well. So the challenge is to enable people to sustain greater levels of activity across all domains of life. Of course, frequent sport and recreational exercise would deliver important health gains. It's really worrying, for example, in places like the UK, where I live, that over a period of decades, so many sports facilities in schools were sold off and developments were built in instead, which, of course, were very profitable. But there's been a real, real problem for the young. But the benefits to greater activity can accrue from more mundane steps. And many important health gains are unlocked when the individual moves from a totally inactive lifestyle, slumped in front of the TV most of the day, to some degree of activity. I mean, the improvement in health is actually quite substantial. They may not meet the recommended guidelines, and I don't think we can expect everyone to do that. And it's interesting because I was doing a little interview before with questions asked from various people who had been getting information about this over the last few weeks from various countries around the EU, and some of them are, you know, we work 15 hours a day, how can we possibly do any activity at all? Well, you can. I think we'll debate that in a little while. What can employers do? But taking a brisk walk, taking the stairs instead of an elevator, getting on it, by the way, not walking down, but walking up is the way to do it. Walking down does terrible things to your knee joints. So, but walking up is incredibly good. Getting on a bicycle instead of a bus, but of course wearing a helmet and make sure you don't get crushed by a lorry, as happens in London all the time. But those are quite important things nevertheless, and some cities are hugely better at it than others. But they are very crucial lifestyle choices. And if they are supported, then they become habits, and they contribute, of course, to tackling the crisis. So all those are things that we do know, and we know that they are good for you. But if you estimate what they can actually do in terms of cutting costs and also saving lives, our analysis suggests that cutting the prevalence of physical inactivity, which seems to be so widespread right now in Europe, by just a fifth, we can do a lot better than that, but just a fifth could save 100,000 lives a year and reduce annual economic costs of this type of inactivity by 16 billion a year. But of course, it can't happen overnight. I mean, people can do a certain amount of things, but so should their employers, so should the policymakers. A lot more information and analysis needs to be done and explained to people by health professionals. But of course, at the end of the day, households can put a lot of pressure on this too. So while the scale of the challenge, of course, is large, there is hope that, at least at an individual level, there is quite a lot that people can do themselves. But of course, it can't stop there. Nevertheless, take more active steps towards less sedentary lifestyles. But I think very, very important, of course, to get a variety of share stakeholders involved, because that's where you get the best results. It includes governments, corporations, and of course the media as well, to encourage this. And I think we all, and some of us are here now and in this room, we have roles to play in helping to tackle what is obviously a society-wide problem. Thank you.
Thank you for that. Some very startling figures that you've given us. I mean, 500,000 Europeans dying every year as a result of physical inactivity is a huge headline figure. So let me now turn to Mergens. Your organisation has, its founding doctrine is to get people moving. And Vicky's explained, if we just got a fifth of the people to move more, we'd have huge benefits. That's probably not news to you. What's your organisation doing to try and get people moving? What are your ambitions for Europe?
I will say that, first of all, we have to recognise the problem. And unfortunately, not all sectors have recognised the size of the problem, because this is a huge problem. For us, as Tamsin said, it's also an important challenge, a challenge that we have to solve. Imagine there are 500,000 lives lost every year. There are 80 billion euro wasted. I think we have a moral, ethical, and a financial obligation to make change happen. We know, especially because we are from a small sector, civil society sector, that no one sector can solve this alone. Multiple sectors have to focus on the challenge and contribute to the solution. So instead of looking at each other and asking what the other sectors can do, I think we need to commonly focus on the common challenge, and we need to act sector-wise, but we also need to act in collaboration, because in this case in particular, collaboration and multi-sector intervention will give a better and stronger outreach, impact, and results. It sounds very easy, but it's quite difficult. On the political side, and this is not only a message for Sean Kelly, but all his national colleagues, we know that in political debates and when it comes to political priorities, preventive actions are not very, what could you say, attractive. Focus on cure is, on the contrary, very attractive for political debates. And this has to change. We need to see political priorities that goes into prevention and physical activity promotion. Despite, and I'm sorry, but despite the results will occur in the next election period. Prevention is more fun. It is easier and much cheaper. So it has to be a political priority. Civil society and the NGO sector, in its wide spectrum from, you can say, daily physical activity like walking and cycling to recreational physical activity and grassroots sport, need also to give priority to the health aspects of our core activities. For us, it's a moral duty, and as well, it is a wish from the fellow citizens, where 70% says that improving health is the main motivation for them to be physically active. And I come from an organization with a name, or with the word sport in its title, name. So I need to clarify for some of you that when I say recreational physical activity and grassroots sport, it has nothing to do with Champions League and other sports broadcasted in television. This is about initiative, physical activities happening in real life, where people live, and in places and environments where our family, peers and friends means a lot more for our choices than football stars in the television. In ISCA, we have, together with our partners, initiated our small contribution to this. We call it Now We Move, a campaign that includes a week, the Move Week, where we try to mobilize people across Europe from bottom up. And last year, it was a participation from 38 countries in Europe, a little bit bigger than the European Union, with 1,140 cities and 5,600 events. All of this done by what we call move agents plus 2,000. So this is our small contribution, and we look for other sectors to assist us a little bit more.
Excellent, thank you. So now let me turn to Antonio from the European Commission. We are losing the population of Luxembourg, or more, every year because of physical inactivity. And we've heard, Morgan said, one of the key issues, we need to recognise it's a problem in order to generate the political will and the momentum for change. So from the Commission's point of view, do they recognise the problem? Are they ready to take action? What's happening?
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for the question, but first of all, thank you for the invitation that allows us to express a little bit what we are doing at the European level. I think so. If we go back to the Council recommendation from 2013, where the Council of Ministers of Sport recognized and addressed the health and physical activity as one of the key elements of the sport domain, this is really the, let's say, the political recognition that we have in front of us an issue. And the political masters have accepted that. So we don't need no longer a sort of a clear message, a clear political commitment to say we have to do. They have done that. So we have this frame. So now we have to do things in concrete terms. What are we doing? One of the things that was mentioned, that doing nothing costs nothing, but doing something, moving, don't cost nothing also. So we can do if we want. So one of the things should be, and this is inside in the recommendation, is how could we address this physical activity in the schools? Because this is the starting point. If we want to do something, we have to convince member states to start to do. But again, we are in a subsidiarity area, so we have no mandatory power. This is something that member states have to do. What we, from our European side level, we are trying to make this bridge. Well, I'm new in the job since the 1st of January. I was responsible for the education until then, so I try all the time make the bridge between both. So I think one of the key messages that we want to do now is how could we convince education sector to address this issue starting from scratch. So the element of including physical activity in the education is one of the elements. We try to do this through our network. We have groups of directory channels for sports. We have group of directory channels for schools. So we try to combine the message. So this is what we are doing at this moment. And as it was said, we can't address the issue only through sports. This is a collective responsibility. It's a responsibility for government at different levels, and above all, at municipalities. Okay, regional and local level is a key responsibility, but also from private sector. From private sector, because they have this kind of corporate social responsibility that is being preached all around. So we have to do this in this sense. But also, I said we have to promote physical activity in the schools. But we have also probably to promote physical activity in the business. Because this could be also very key for productivity, for well-being of the employees, so they will be better in the. So we have to address the issue in a more global way. And for that purpose, we and member states accept it, because when I say we at commission level, we can do what we can do, but the actions happen at national and local level. So what we are now planning is in cooperation with member states, and in cooperation with a number of NGOs, namely ISCA, that is part of our initiative. We are launching this year the first European Week of Sport. The hashtag is being be active. So it's really intended to promote this activity, this running way, this mechanism of trying to push to Europeans to move in a way. So we have to articulate all our efforts. So, but as I said, this is something that is a policy that we have to do all together, different sectors. But also having in mind that when you talk about sports, we can talk about the higher competition, but we also can talk about grassroots. And this is where we want to achieve. How can we also contribute for that? And then we have different dimensions of sports, because sports also, if we are saying that sports is very, very important for employees, it is critical for growth, for productivity, for jobs. So even if we are in a very soft area, we believe that this is very critical for the economy at global level.
Thank you. Let me turn now to Sean, who has a unique role sitting both in the European Parliament but also having helped to create the Irish Institute of Sport. So this is your life's work, if you like, getting people up and moving. We heard from Antonio that the political leaders have accepted and acknowledged this problem and have starting to do something, but they get stuck. It's a subsidiarity issue. It's a member state area. They can't mandate change. What's your viewpoint on how we can get Europe more active?
I'm going to stand up. I will answer your question certainly in more detail when we come to the discussion, because you did say it was a matter of subsidiarity, but I think things are beginning to change a little bit, both at grassroots level and at member state level. But firstly, and I'll come back to that later on, but first I just want to give you my opening remarks, if I may. So thanks for having me here, because we're discussing an issue which affects all, economically, socially and culturally. I think we need to emphasise these aspects, because they're all connected with physical inactivity. And I think the health benefits of being physically active are well documented, because it promotes well-being, physical and mental health, and then the other side prevents disease, as Vicky was saying, improves quality of life and its economic and social and cultural benefits. Being physically active reduces, for example, the following: risk of dying prematurely, risk of cardiovascular disease, high blood pressure, stroke, diabetes, colon, breast cancer, risk of falling and of hip and vertebral fractures, and risk of depression. It is almost a medicine in itself. So that's the way we have to look at it. So we have to look at, I think, the cause of the problem, analyse its effects and consequences, and then, of course, as you said, try and find solutions. You mentioned, and I think you're right, education is a huge area. And particularly, it's quite obvious that both at primary and post-primary level, there's not sufficient physical activity. And in Ireland, my own country, which obviously I have a lot of experience of, it is estimated that only 19% of primary and 12% of post-primary school children meet the physical activity recommendations. One in four children were unfit, overweight or obese, and had high blood pressure. One factor leading to this is the low number of hours per week provided for pupils. It's usually supposed to be 1 hour. And also, apart from that, there's a socioeconomic factor, because children who would be getting the same amount of activity within the school in different, particularly poorer socioeconomic areas, it didn't translate to non-school activities, such as sport and physical activity in the community. So then, what are the effects of physical inactivity? The WHO says it's the fourth leading risk factor for global mortality and is estimated to be associated with 1 million deaths per year in the WHO region. Globally, physical activity is thought to be responsible for 6% of the burden of disease from coronary heart disease. In my country, it's 8.8%. 7% of type 2 diabetes in my country, 10.9%. 10% of breast cancer in my country, 15.2%. 10% of colon cancer in my country, 15.7%. So there's obviously a big variation amongst different countries. And often, unfortunately, the wealthier a country is, the more problems it has because of, as you pointed out, sedentary lifestyles, etc. So it's estimated to cost about 150 to 300 euro per citizen per year. So in a worst-case scenario, that would imply in my country, with only 4 million population, a cost to the economy of 1.5 billion. Another factor which hasn't been spoken about often enough as well, and this brings you back to your question about the workplace and the private sector in particular, there are significant indirect economic costs. Loss of economic output due to absenteeism, something that needs to be studied a lot more. And I will come back to that again with some ideas on that. Disease-related work disabilities and premature death. So solutions, obviously nationally led and community-based programs is what's required. Europe can only do so much because of subsidiarity. And particularly, I think, working through the organisations that are there. The GAA in my country, I was president of that. It's the biggest sporting organisation in the country, promoting Gaelic Games. The FEI, promoting soccer, the RFU. And approximately 70 more national bodies. And most of these, at grassroots level, are working on a voluntary capacity. So I think it is through these and getting people involved more that would normally be within their catchment area that you can actually reach more people. Therefore, national and local sports organisations should always be invited to be involved in any campaign on health, education, transport, environment. It is only by involving people at grassroots level who are already have the resources and contacts in place that increasing participation can be achieved. So, in relation to some of the points I mentioned, we would hope particular member states would consider revising their national curricula to include sufficient time for PE and related school activities. I think, for instance, I said in Ireland, it's 1 hour. I think, for instance, in places like Cuba, it's a minimum of 4 hours. And that was reduced, I think, from something like 6 hours. So they were not too happy with it. But we have a long way to go. Volunteers make 90% of all staff working in sports clubs and around Europe, and they should be given incentives. Taking into consideration, the sports sector contributes 3.7% of EU GDP, and employment for 15 million people, or 5.4% of the labour force, the sector's strong potential to contribute to smart, sustainable and inclusive growth and new jobs is undeniable. We just need to tap into it and put it more higher up in the agenda. It's very far down the agenda. But if you bring the economic factors into it, then you can make it more relevant, particularly at Parliament level, both in national member states and at European level. So I think, obviously, coming back to Morgan's point, awareness raising is vital, and the implications for physical inactivity, as opposed to talking about physical activity, the implications, I think, of physical inactivity. We're doing the same now in relation to other topics. We're talking about the cost of non-Europe, the cost of non-TTIP, but we won't go there tonight. So maybe we should be doing the same here, the cost of non-physical activity in relation to the broader sphere, health, and particularly, I think, work as well. So I can come back to those in due course. That might be enough for my opening remarks. And thankfully, Vicky, the table is still upright. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Let me pass the floor now to James from Coca-Cola, because we've heard now that this, the size of the problem, and it starts at a very early age, but it affects us right through adulthood. So this is affecting our workforce. It's affecting productivity. It's affecting the employment prospects. So there's a key role here for the private sector to play. So what can you share with us from your point of view? How's the private sector stepping up on this?
Sure. I'll join my colleague and stand up on this one and hopefully not knock the table over. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's a pleasure being here. Thanks for Friends of Europe and CBRE for hosting this event. I'm pleased to be on this panel. I mean, in the end, the real problem of physical inactivity here, this report does a great job of highlighting the costs of our new push-button society and the cost of our physical inactivity. The numbers you mentioned are staggering, the 80 billion euros, the 4 out of 5 adolescents not meeting the activity level, or even the 500,000 deaths. I mean, all these are really big numbers and quite indebatable, the idea that this is a health time bomb. So I think the report does a good job because it doesn't just admire the problem and say, here's what's wrong, but it starts to set out some sensible steps on what can be done and be very clear that not enough is being done today. But I think within that of calling out what are the solutions, it helped frames it, going back to what you were saying, it helped frames it as a sense of it needs to be a partnership. Yes, there's a role for government, supranational, national, and local, for corporations, a wide range of NGOs and other organizations. Also roles for technology and innovation. I'll come back to why I think that's important, as long with education, whether it's in the school, directly in that environment, or through other means. And I think all of that's right because, quite simply, there is no silver bullet. There is no one single way of defeating this problem of physical inactivity. And so I'm pleased to be on this panel because I really believe that corporations have a role to play, not just because they have a responsibility to society, not just for altruistic reasons, but in the end, you can only have a healthy business if there's a healthy local community in which to operate. So, you know, it's a fundamental imperative for corporations to play their part. And to be honest, I've seen how this framework can work. We've provided support to an organization called EPOD. They take a multifaceted approach to a number of health issues, getting involved in redesigning transport systems, working on education, access to grassroots programs. That was more around the obesity area. But you can find a lot of things where when you bring people together, you can make stuff happen. I've also seen it where companies team up together to bring innovation to bear. We had one just beginning last year. We teamed up with a company called Endomundo. They created a computer app called Just Dance. I know that all of you in the room have this on your smartphone, but for those of you who don't, this is something where you have to move, not just in time with the music, but do the right moves to the music holding your phone. And in less than a year, we've accumulated 26 million minutes of people dancing to this app, and it's rolling out. So technology and innovation absolutely play a role in moving forward. And I think that's an example of something else the report picks up on. Not only is it not just about sport, it's about movement. Not only is it not just about technology and innovation, it's about making it positive and fun. If we think we'll convince people to move more by making them feel guilty and not letting the gym membership lapse at the end of February, I think we're making a mistake. We've got to meet people where they are. They want it to be positive. They want it to be fun. They want it to be activity. And so those, you know, examples, we've got another 90 across Europe. Actually, I think some of them we've helped out. Street Games and Park Lives may even be here. And I think, you know, that's not enough. You know, the price of entry for us in our minds is, you know, as an employer, there's no point us coming along and trying to get into partnerships with the companies, with NGOs, on wider schemes unless we've got our own house in order, unless we're doing things in our own offices and factories. You know, we employ something over 50,000 people here in Europe across the Coca-Cola system. You know, we spend a lot of time trying to design the offices, the factories, the logistics systems to help people be more active, to help them have better lifestyles, including actually we joined in with the Move Week with ISCA. Last year we got 20,000 of our employees and their families moving in the Move Week events. So, yes, we see it as, yes, something we need to do in-house, but also participate with other organizations and governments in their programs. And in the end, you know, we're here because we recognize it's not enough. We haven't got to a point where inactivity is declining or the not being active, whichever way around that is going up, which is always better if the line is going up. So the question becomes, how do we get more people moving? And I look forward, no pun intended, obviously, to an active debate.
Great, thank you very much. So we've had our opening statement from all of our panelists, and they've thrown out lots of ideas for us to explore, not least, you know, where do we start? How do we get momentum? What's going wrong with our young people? Because it's really quite dramatic, the figures there, particularly if you, Vicky opened up a little bit more, that it's girls who are dropping out of sport. So we have some issues there to address, and whether the facilities exist, whether local government are taking their responsibility seriously, whether people understand the reality of this and that there is a difference between sport and movement and physical activity, and that health gains can come from really quite basic movement. You don't have to start running a marathon, which might be in people's long-term goal, but really it's about moving up and down stairs rather than the escalators. Okay, so let me turn this now to the audience, and I notice you're all sitting down, so feel free to stand when you ask your question. If you could introduce yourself and briefly give us your question, that would be helpful. Yes, we'll start there.
Thank you. My name is Graham Watson. One of the things I do is that I'm the president of Europe Active, formerly the European Health and Fitness Association. And I'd like to put a question primarily to Antonio Silva Mendes and to Sean Kelly. The fitness clubs that make up the Europe Active family are clubs who, between them, employ nearly 500,000 people across the European Union and who contribute some £26 billion to the economy. Is the problem not that we are seeing this in terms of sport and not in terms of the growth and competitiveness agenda? Because of course it's about fighting obesity, of course it's about healthy aging, but it's actually about growth and competitiveness as well, because a huge amount of money is being spent on fitness and on related things.
Thank you. We'll gather a few questions together and pass them to the panel. I see a hand over here.
Thank you. My name's Kerry McDonald from Street Games in the United Kingdom. The question to all the panel is really about, is the offer right for people to get active? Street Games represents the poorest young people in the UK. Our focus is on an offer to young people that understands their lifestyles and tries to understand what will get them active and keep them active. We're very lucky to have Coca-Cola on board with us. We do close work with Birmingham City Council as a brilliant local authority, particularly their work around parks. And our mission is to understand the needs of young people, the lifestyles of young people, and give them what they want, which isn't in the UK a traditional offer of sport and competitive sport, and it isn't high-cost gyms or fitness centres. So the question is, across Europe, is the offer close to right, because more and more people are becoming inactive rather than active? And how do we turn that tide around and making sure the offer, particularly at local level, meets the lifestyle needs of the people we're trying to attract?
Excellent. Okay, well, panel, I'm going to invite you to start thinking about those questions. Is the offer right? And Mergan's, I'm obviously going to be coming to you with that question first. The issue about growth and competitiveness, I'm going to throw that to the European Commission, which has growth and competitiveness in its core focus this year. And I'll invite, perhaps Vicky, you can come in and add in some additional comments about those linkages. Mergens, is the offer right?
For those who are already active, apparently yes. For those who are not, no. But there's maybe another word for offer, and that might be motivation. So is the offer/motivation right? And I think the challenge here is, of course, not to offer more of the same to those who not already buy it, but to try to not motivate or offer in your daily life something that's easy for you to join. And here I cannot gain more members in my part of grassroots sport, but that's okay, because we know also in the grassroots sport that it's easier for us to have, you could say, members if they're already active. So I would be happy if the physical inactive could be active with a simple thing like take the stairs instead of the elevators, do something in a context where you feel comfortable and at a level where you are comfortable. And here I think we need quite a few to change the offer or to motivate or nuts or whatever it's called today, and we are only part of it.
Okay, Thank you. I'll also come to Sean, because you actually set up an Institute of Sport in Ireland, so you're aware of the diversity of the offer. But we've also heard that there are gaps, particularly for young people. In your view, do we have the right range of things on offer? And we heard from Mergens it's about motivation. Are we offering things that provide people the right incentives to move?
Well, at institute level, you're only talking about the elite of the elite. So they're the basically international sports people, highly ambitious, totally dedicated. But they do play a very important role in motivating young people, because they become heroes for them. And also anybody who's interested can kind of aspire to that level. So that is, I think, very important. But I think two things that are happening at the minute. Number one, thanks to events like Move Week, etc., more people are becoming aware that they need to take care of their physical well-being from a health point of view, and more people are getting involved. But maybe at the other end, we're losing more people, and especially youngsters, we call them that, because they're leading more sedentary lifestyles, more time in front of the computer, the iPad, the iPhone, television, you name it. And we need to start young, and the younger the better. And I think actually what's happening is an awful lot of adults who are now going to these physical gyms, etc., I think many of those were probably active in their younger days, and then maybe in their, when they give up sport or whatever, became inactive, and now going back to being active again. But there's a whole range of people who weren't into that habit, and we must try and get them moving. And I think sometimes when you say, and maybe for instance, if you want to be healthy, you must have 20 minutes every day of pretty strenuous physical activity. I read that a week or two ago in a paper. And it said as well that walking slow wasn't good enough. You had to kind of jog for a while and put your heart beating. That's a huge turn off for anybody who's obese, overweight or whatever. So we should be trying to change it. And maybe this is where Morgan's mentioned about motivation. I think we should say to people, you need to be fairly active, maybe 5-10 minutes a day. Christmas time, if you want to take a week or two off, take it off. Put on a few pounds, and then come 1st of January, get motivated again. But this notion that you have to do 20 minutes every day, or else you're going to die of a heart attack very soon, I think a lot of it is the way you position it. But certainly, there is more awareness, definitely, both at general level, at political level, and I think especially amongst adults who may have fallen into disrepair.
Fallen into disrepair. What a nice way of explaining what's happening. Okay, Antonio, I'm going to come to you for the European Commission's view. We heard about a question from the audience about how this is really about growth and competitiveness and jobs. It's not really just an issue of sport and health. Given that this is the core theme of the current mandate of the Commission, is growth and jobs, how could you see across the Commission them taking this issue seriously? And can you see within your colleagues in different DGs, do they understand the link to competitiveness and jobs of physical inactivity?
I think they start to be convinced that this is a fact. I can give you a small example of what the Commission is doing internally. Our Vice President Georgieva just launched a small initiative called Fit at Work, internally to the Commission. So this means that the Commission is also aware of this kind of problematic that we have, because we are seated in front of our PC I don't know how many hours per day. This obliges us also to reflect on the way. So the first thing is that if we are convinced that this is something, we start to apply ourselves. And this is a fact. So we are starting to apply ourselves. But of course, this is also a question, and sport is a question of business. It's really a business. And we can estimate that a big percentage of the European Union GDP comes from the sports activity in general. It depends on what you consider a sports activity. But, okay, even if we are talking now about grassroots, the fitness activities, so this is already a huge amount of money. But moving around is also a question of culture. Our own mentality. Do we want to do it? And this for that reason that we believe it's very important that we address the key partners. One of the key partners are schools, are the education. So we are saying effectively, if we want to change, we have to integrate a number of policies around education, health, employment. So a lot of policies should be all together in order to address the issue. This is why in the European Week of Sport that we will be doing in September, from the 7th to the 13th, I think, if I don't make a mistake, we have focus days where we address different thematics, education, fitness. We have also, so we have number of activities that we believe are very important. But above all, if we want to move, is if we move as an obligation, we will not move. So we have to change our mentality. And this starts from the school. This starts from the early childhood education.
Thank you. I'm going to come to Vicky, because as someone who's worked at the highest level of government, and governments are concerned about these big issues of competitiveness and jobs, how do you think we can get this issue of the cost of inactivity and the need to centralise this into policy more clearly on the agenda?
I think obviously if we're losing an awful lot of people prematurely, this is not very good for our economy and our growth. So that's obvious. If you're losing in terms of productivity, it's the same thing. But I think it's an interesting point that was made about the industry itself. I mean, yes, I think there are all these gadgets which are, of course, now being developed. But people walk around and can see the sort of heart. I mean, they stop and stare at the thing they've got around their arm. I still have no idea what it is. It's this app that sort of keeps track of your, you know, anyway. So they all seem to be very keen on this. So exercise can become a fad. And, of course, it can be a big growth sector. And I see the latest, you know, bicycles you can have in your home. But what it does nevertheless identify, I think, for me, is that there are differences depending on how wealthy you are. So when you look at activity and you look at the way that people are aware of health issues, the richer you are, and we looked at across countries as well, the more aware you are of it, and, of course, the more you can spend on all these gadgets. And, of course, we can have as Europe, as Europeans, but although I think the Americans are way ahead of us in some of this sort of paranoia they have about some of these things, but we can have a competitive edge in thinking out all sorts of new ways in which you can keep your body sort of going. But I think the point of the richer you are, the more aware you are of it, goes back, I think, to the issue of do we have the offer right, you know, kids in the street, and I think you need a slightly different type of offer for those kids. And I think in terms of what it does mentally, in terms of what it does for them integrating with society, in terms of what it does for them becoming proper citizens, which of course then leads to greater productivity, more social happiness across and well-being. I think these are very, very significant issues. So sport and activity can lead to all sorts of other areas where we can have positive impacts on society, which we tend to forget. But it is an uphill struggle overall. And I think I just want to give you some figures about what's been happening in jobs, because in a way, in the past, it would happen naturally because, you know, kids went out to work early and they worked on the land or whatever it is. And, you know, blue-collar workers, that's disappearing in terms of real physical activity. And what we've seen just in the last two decades is that the sort of more active jobs, if you want to call them that, have declined as a share of the total. And what we've seen in the less active, so they've actually fallen in number by 7 million in Europe. And what we've seen in the less active roles is that they've done the opposite. They're up by 43 million over the years to 2014. So we've seen the shift in work. So if you've got that type of problem to deal with, then I think what businesses do and what government does and what media does and how you sell the idea rather than making them think that it's an impossible task to do becomes so much more important.
I'm going to come to you now, James, because what we've just heard there is about the shift in work and how workforces have a key place to play in this, to help people move. You said of the 50,000 people you've got working for you, you've got 20,000 of them engaged in the Move Week, so you're clearly doing something right. And Vicky just said it's also about how we market and communicate to people about the accessibility. And again, this marketing ideas to people is another area of core skill set of your community. So what else can you add on this?
I think there's a number of things that the companies do apart from participating with other people and helping set up organizations or the partnerships like the app I talked about or directly moving the employees in the Move Week. But I think there's a whole panoply of things that the employers have to do, whether it's about providing information, on health checkups. I mean, one of the number one things you can do, for example, on obesity is weigh yourself every day. I mean, everything doesn't have to be complicated and expensive. So there are lots of little things employers can do. I'll give you another small example. We used to have an office in London, which very unfortunately the power generator blew up and burned down. Because it was a building that was designed 20 years ago, everything was organized around the elevators. You couldn't move through the stairs was in the corner somewhere through 10 fire exits and God knows what. So we were paralyzed. But they got the power on, except for they couldn't power the elevator. So everyone had to walk up and down the four floors. 6 months later, we won't worry about how long it took 6 months to repair the power, but 6 months later we had the power restored, and people felt they'd become fitter and lost weight just through the one sheer thing of everyone had to move up and down the stairs. The people at the top lost more than the people at the bottom, logically, such is life, and I was at the top. So when we moved office, we actually pushed the elevators into the corner and made the stairs the central feature of the office building. So it's about the small things, about helping the employees weigh themselves, it's about getting their families involved, it's about redesigning the way work is constructed to nudge people. Not everything, part of motivation is making them do it without thinking. If the stair is the easiest way to get round, they'll take it. And it's all these little things will add up.
Excellent, thank you. We have lots of hands up. And I saw that one first, and then we'll move this way. So, yes.
Thank you very much. I'm Karen Creven, head of Birmingham City Council's Wellbeing Services. We've got 1 million people living in Birmingham. 40% of them, over 400,000 of them, live in the top 10% most deprived in the country. And we know that cost is a real barrier, and we've been able to do some really exciting work with some of the people in this room about removing the cost with our free schemes like Be Active and Active Parks. But I suppose one of the things that leads me on to thinking about is how do we affect behaviour change in a system-wide way, and how do we identify those barriers and then work together to remove them? Because I think for me, ultimately, it's about cost in a city like Birmingham. How do we tackle that across Europe? We're not the only city thinking about this.
Excellent, thank you. Yeah, we'll start in that corner and we'll move on. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Okay, and we have 5 minutes left, so.
Good evening, I'll stretch a little bit here. My name is Sergei Koperdak. Thank you for a very interesting panel. I'm actually an advisor on new technologies at DJ Act. I'm a colleague of Antonio's. I appreciate very much the raising the point on technology innovation. I think technology has been perceived today more as sort of the cause of people sitting more, perhaps, stuck on their iPads and so on. But I think using technology more as an enabler to get people moving, I think is a great point and perhaps something we can develop further. But my question is less as an official but more as a parent. I'm a father myself. After work, you're kind of tired. You have children. Maybe you want to watch TV or relax, and your children, they're sitting with you. So I think it's perhaps something that you can elaborate maybe further on. And what are the role of parents? Because in that non-formal, out-of-the-classroom environment, they're often the ones there, or their friends are there. And how do you get them moving? Because one thing is you want them to have those coding skills. We talk about competitiveness and so on. On the other hand, you want to make sure they're physically fit. So how do you get that balance?
Good point. And by the way, I have a toddler, and I can tell you that toddlers move all the time. And we gradually teach them to sit and be still through the education system. So we're now going to have to teach them to move again. There's something missing there in that link. Okay, we have, yes. Microphone.
I'm Alex Weig, CEO of PatientView, and also My Health Apps with D here. We have a site that curates apps that have been nominated by consumers and patient groups. I think the apps are something that haven't really been discussed that much, and they are a powerful force for social mobilization, and in theory stretch into wide areas of the community, including some of the poorest ones. But the problem that we find is that there's a huge amount of redundancy, and that even with the fitness apps, that people don't stick with them. And the problem is that there's been a lack of user involvement in the design of these apps, and much more need for greater input about really understanding what makes people tick and get them moving. Okay, thank you.
Excellent, thank you. Okay, we were moving this way, right. Behind you, and then I'll move forward, yes.
Thanks. I'm Stefano Spinacci, working for the European Public Administration. Just a provocative proposal. I was thinking to the fact that sometimes we look to the physical activity like a leisure activity or aesthetic activity that we do for our aesthetic. And perhaps we should incentivize this idea that it's not only that, but it's mainly it's for our health. On one side, so on the side of the people, and on the side of the public administration and the company, to see it more not like a business but like an investment. So could be considered I don't know, the possibility to detract, for example, from the tax the expenses that people make to go for a gym which are certified to do kind of health activity, because I you mentioned that in this report, especially, I'm not speaking for myself, that especially some part of this society are a bit excluded by this activity. And on the side of the company, for example, if they organize physical activity in their buildings, they can detract from the tax these kind of expenses or...
So fiscal measures, you think?
Fiscal measure, okay. Like, for example, if they organize 1 hour of physical activity on the 40 hours, if this hour is less taxed in the job cost, okay, for the company.
Great, thank you. Yeah, and then we're moving to the next row forward, yes.
My name is Jürgen Steinacker from the European Institute for Exercise and Medicine. I'm happy to be here, part of these recommendations. And I want to focus also on the part of the healthcare system in the inactivity role. Doctors we have a nearly perfect healthcare system dealing with acute diseases, but it has a problem with chronic diseases because doctors are rewarded for dealing with risks, not with health and life. And I think we should not we should also talk in the healthcare system rewarding health behavior of the patients. If you have a heart surgery which costs €30,000, afterwards, nobody's caring about promoting life for this patient. And therefore, we address doctors, medical doctors, they're very important for the attitudes of their patients, but they don't care about these attitudes. And I would focus on this as well. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes. Moving forward.
Only one question to Coca-Cola. Is it better to drink Red Bull? Thank you.
Okay. Wait. Yes, did you want, and then we'll come back this way.
Thank you very much for organizing this discussion. I'm Nevena Vukasinovic, Secretary General of ENGSO Youth. And I just wanted to emphasize and raise up one thing. And now when we are talking about diverse target groups and how to approach them, maybe when we are talking about youth, it would be good if we invite them to this kind of roundtables to talk and to find the solutions for themselves. So that's just a recommendation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. We're moving forward now to this front row. Yes, here. And then we'll...
Thank you. Bernard Ensing from the European Cyclist Federation. Two remarks. One is one of the latest reports from the WHO on obesity, I thought, was mentioning that the Dutch have less problems with obesity, and the Dutch are the best in cycling infrastructure. We should take care of that. And I'm happy with all the remarks on transport. And to the stairs, to removing, you can say, the elevators to the edge and to put the stairs in the middle, we should do this in the European cities with our transport infrastructure. If we put walking and cycling in the middle and bringing the motorized transport to the edge, we have solved the problem.
Human-powered transport, yes. And then, Pamela, I'm going to invite you to make a final comment on any of these issues that have come forward.
Thank you. I'm Bilaljin from BioCrop Science, and I wanted to regard the youth as well, the teenagers, and tackle two points there. One point is schools. If we talk about schools, and I was obese when I was younger as well, and I hated PE in school because I was obese and the other people who were more sporty than me got better marks. And so I just skipped it. I used searched ways to don't go there. So I think, I wanted to ask, do you think of other ways than the usual ways, just having more PE lessons and just having some weeks or days besides of them? Do you think on other ways? That would be good for the obese people who are not that active and not that good in the competition. And on the other side, I wanted to tackle the digital and the technical issues or points, where I think, so did you think of when talking about having the young people adapted and stick to those apps? Having people from Instagram, for example, there are so many people who are influencers and have fitness sites where the young people follow and ask for advices how to do their sports, what to eat, etc. And to have maybe sessions with them and talk about how to market this on their sites, because I think it's all about marketing when we want people to stick to apps, and these are the people we need to market to young people.
Okay, thank you. So, panel, lots of ideas there for you to pick up. Technology has been coming up several times, technology and innovation, both how do we make the app sticky so people keep using them, how do we make it an enabler, how do we bring in user involvement, particularly young people, because there's an appetite out there, there's an interest, and they're using it. What do we do about the cost? The cost is still a barrier, particularly for the most deprived. Are there opportunities to use fiscal incentives, both for individuals in terms of lower healthcare premiums, but also for companies? And then finally, what about transport and making human-powered transport easier? So it's about city planning and regulations. So, panel, who would like to take which of those issues? Maybe what we'll do is we'll start with Sean and we'll move our way, and you can answer on any of those.
Yeah, there are a whole range of issues there, and they're all interesting. One point I think is missing. We haven't used the word enjoyment tonight. And if you are under stress at work or whatever, and you're expected to do some physical activity you don't enjoy, you're not going to do it, nor should you. And I think even coming back to the question about PE classes, etc., there is too much emphasis, even in well-structured PE classes, that you have to have 6 weeks doing cricket and another 6 weeks doing tennis and another 6 weeks doing something else. We should start with what's enjoyable. And particularly we're trying to reach out to those who aren't naturally sporty, let's put it that way. So that's where we have to start. If they enjoy something, no matter what it is, let them at it and encourage them. Besides forcing them to play games that they hate. So I think that's one thing. And the same is true through adult life in particular. And that was why I was mentioning about telling people you have to do so much activity every day. Try and say, listen, it can be enjoyable. Do it with a club. You mentioned about cycling lanes. Absolutely. There's a huge growth in my country in cycling, but it's become terribly dangerous because you have a cycling lane and then it ends and out you are in the middle of the road, which is desperate. But recently in my own area, they put in a lovely walk area off the main road along the national park and by the lakes. And it's a huge difference. Way more people are actually involved. One other point I want to mention, you mentioned about work, etc. Going back to what I mentioned about absenteeism. I read recently that in my country, the number of people, particularly in the public service, who are absent from work is growing. And I think in the Department of Health, that's the worst. And again, it's because of the way we position it. You're entitled to 15 days absent per year. So they take 15 days. They're sick 15 days. They imagine they're sick. Where in actual fact, it should be perhaps the other way around. If you don't have any days absent, then maybe you get a reward. Or 1 day or 2 days. And I'll finish with this. Because I've been thinking about this a long time. I played a lot of sport, a lot of friends. And I've been looking at their attendance at work over their lifetimes. And I'd say between them, if they missed 15 days in a year, it would be a lot. I know some of them who went through an entire career, 20, 30 years, and they didn't miss hardly a day at work. So try and emphasise the positive and emphasise enjoyment. And I think we can go a long way by doing that. Thank you.
Thank you. Vicky.
Thank you. Just on a few of the points raised, I think on doctors, they should be paid also by how long they keep the people alive and the quality of life. So that that will change things significantly. On businesses and incentives, I think it's a good idea to perhaps give some tax incentives, but frankly, I think it's a real business case. I mean, businesses do a lot better if they have happy people working for them and productive people who don't fall ill. So that's the counter argument for incentives, but it's certainly something to be looked at. On obesity at school, which I think is a very important issue, I think what schools should be doing is being more innovative and imaginative in terms of other activities they can offer, which slowly encourage the person involved to do, find out a little bit more about what their own abilities, in fact, are, and perhaps how they'll want to be if they want to compete with others, because they're really good at something which is peripheral to what others are doing. So, I mean, I have to admit that this is perhaps a slightly costly exercise, but I know of one particularly obese person who got into real sport through fencing, which doesn't require an awful lot of running around, but it's actually incredibly skillful sort of thing to be doing. And there are others, I mean, I don't know, maybe boxing, I don't know, which one can do. So and some girls are quite into it as well, it seems. But so I think that's what the schools should be doing, to encourage people to be thinking about sport a little bit more. On parents, of course, it's incredibly important how parents behave, but you have to watch the sort of guilt thing. And I do remember one morning listening to my Radio 4 in the morning as I was just about to deliver my children to school, with some study done by some university suggesting that children of working mothers are more obese than those of non-working mothers. So, of course, I was listening to this discussion feeling incredibly guilty, but then increasingly angry as an economist, because all they could tell me was this correlation. It could be all sorts of other factors, socioeconomic and everything else. And it ended with me about to throw something at the radio. But when the last question asked was, So you think that this is a really important issue for obesity mothers going to work? And says, well, we haven't actually proved the causality. So I nearly killed the person, although he was somewhere in digital, somewhere in wherever. But this is the sort of information we get as parents, which is really, really counterproductive in this respect. So I think a lot more can be done in terms of spreading the message properly.
Excellent. Mergens.
Quite a few questions, and I think that shows that this is not for one sector to solve, but we need improvement of all sectors. I would like to touch upon the school issue, because that's always a winner. If you bring a civil servant in a room, they will mention school because all children are into schools. But I'll also remind you that school is maybe not the best place to learn people to be physically active in today's schools. Luckily, we have school reforms in a handful of countries in Europe, among them Germany, Hungary, and Denmark, where there will be some results, good or bad, on how to incorporate more physical activity. So we have to learn from these practices, if at all they are good. I would like to remind you that we are in one of the capitals of the European Union, and the objective of this institution is to provide peace and well-being to its citizens. I don't think that is an objective only for European Union. I think peace and well-being is an objective for each individual, and we who are in different sectors need to touch upon that and try to solve this problem. Otherwise, we can have peace but not well-being.
Well, we could be here all the night discussing about all these elements, and I think a lot of good ideas could come out. But to be very pragmatic, be active is the focus of our European Week. So this is the message that has been coming across from our policy masters, to say, okay, we have to do something. But we have to do something starting from ourselves. And this is the reason because we, or why, in the European Week, let's say website or something, we encourage every individual to make their own commitment, to say what I will be doing during that week to move around, to be active. And this can have different impacts, can have impact in myself, but can have impact in the society, in the business, can have impact in the efficiency, can have impact in the growing jobs. Because if we to do active, if we go to the fitness room, we are increasing the attendance in the fitting room, and then we have this the possibility to create new jobs. But this is also related to the responsibility of different governments at different levels. Okay, as it was said in Brussels, if something change, well, and there is something that is changed. We are now seeing a lot of people cycling in the different streets. So this is something that is happening slowly, but probably in good. But we have also to have a commitment from the health side. In what extent the health authorities have also a responsibility on being active. As it was said, in some ways, in some extent, being active is a medicine. So this could be recognized in a certain moment. And then on the education side, of course, we have to start. We have to... I think we have to go to the school. Being responsible for the school's policy at a certain moment, I think we have to go. And this is a real responsibility of the ministers of education and even at municipalities level. We have the obligation to transmit this message to the young people. Finally, the young people, yes, we have to involve them, but they have the capacity to transmit and to animate the debate. Thank you.
James.
Thank you. I guess I'll try and connect a couple of thoughts around technology, and apps, and how do you, is the offering correct? I think we also mustn't lose sight of the fact the answer will not be static. Yes, you can design a city, and someone who knows Birmingham, you know, from it used to be a city built for the roads, and now there's a little bit of pedestrianization. So, you know, there are some permanent things that we can do out there that with the stairs instead of the elevators. But in the end, people stop doing activity because it's boring or something else happened. And I think the idea that, you know, we're going to get an app or we're going to get a set of activities or we're going to get an offering that's going to keep people interested for 60 or 70 years just is unrealistic. You know, anyone who sells products as a company finds that a good proportion of their customers drop off every year and need to be re-recruited across the line. And the same is true of activity. You know, I doubt there's anyone here who's done any one thing for the last 7 years. Even our famous Dutch friends cycling, they have a kid that doesn't fit on the cycle, they've got to do something else. People will change, and we need to, every year, remember the offer needs to be updated, the activities need to be updated, the apps need to be updated, and we need to re-recruit people to the mantra of getting active. Otherwise, human nature is that everything declines to atrophy and the sofa and the television.
Great. Well, thank you all to our panel. I think I'll draw our conversation to a conclusion before we fall into disrepair ourselves or into atrophy. Can we say a warm thank you to all our panel members who really debated the question for me? Yes. So we're now going to invite you to a cocktail, but not just a cocktail. We thought of your health as well. There are some bicycles outside, and you are very welcome to sit on the bicycles and cycle as you chat and network. And of course, the conversation is not finished. You can always go on to the Debating Europe platform to carry on and have this conversation. We hope this is not the end of the conversation, because as James said, this is not a static problem. We'll have to keep moving to find the solution. So thank you all, and enjoy the network.